Ask an Astronomer is part of the Jodcast. For the full show and previous episodes, visit jodcast.net.
And it's time for Ask an Astronomer now with Dr. Tim O'Brien. So thank you very much again, Tim, for coming and answering questions.
No problem.
The first one is from Mike Van Vuren, and he says, how many solar systems do we have confirmed beyond our own? How many planets in total? How many on average in each solar system?
Right. Okay, so I think if ever I come to... I mean, of course, I should point out that you're the expert in this field. if I say anything that you feel needs clarification, just butt in. I think what I do when I'm asked this question, if I want to give an up-to-date answer, I go on the web.
Yes,
and there's a couple of places I would look, which are... There's a couple of websites, one from a European group and one from an American group. One of them is called exoplanet.eu, which you might guess is the European group, and the other is exoplanets.org. And they both give sort of a different picture, actually, of that, their own interpretation of the state of play, I think, of the sort of exoplanet search or extrasolar planet search. I had a quick look at exoplanet.eu just recently, just to check up the current numbers. And the numbers there were that there were 263 planets known outside of our solar system, and that there were 26 multiple planet systems. So that's sort of, you know, basically that answers the question in the sense that of those 263 planets, it's not like there's 26 multiple planet systems, therefore there's 10 planets each. In general, the vast majority have only got one planet known.
Yes.
And of course, you know, I guess the point is that most of these planets are discovered by this Doppler wobble thing, the star wobbles. It sort of orbits the centre of mass, the same centre of mass as the planet does, and so the star's wobbling backwards and forwards, and that's how we infer the existence of this orbiting planet. That's going to be dominated by, presumably, say, the most massive planet, or depends how far away from the star it is as well. So it tends to be biased towards these massive planets close to the parent star. So you're going to see the signature of one planet generally, I would say, and then what happens is you keep observing, looking for, superimposed on that, you might see additional wobbles that are due to these other planets. So that's been done for 26 systems so far. I've got more than one planet, so we can't really answer the question how many there are on average because we're still searching.
It's because our experiments are a little bit biased.
Yeah.
Whatever experiment you do to try and find extra planets are going to be biased one way or the other, and it's quite difficult to try and disentangle that out. So when you get a basic question like the one we have here from Mike, it's quite difficult to actually give a precise answer, but we're getting closer. We understand our experiments better and better, and we're able to take what we observe and convert that into, well, this is what we expect is actually out there in the universe. The next part of this question is, what is the average size of the planets found?
And he sort of course, what I just mentioned there was the fact that most of these techniques are biased, going to be biased towards the bigger planets, right? So, for example, this Doppler wobble thing, the bigger the planet is, the more effect it's going to have on the orbit of the star itself. So they do tend to be Jupiter-sized or bigger. And, of course, in that particular technique, generally you're not sure. What you get is a lower limit on the mass as well, because it depends on the inclination of the planet's orbit. They could generally be more massive than what we get. So, yeah, typically they're massive planets. Having a quick look at exoplanet.eu has quite a nice little facility where there's a sort of live feature allowing you to make histograms of planet mass. So basically it'll tell you how many planets there are between certain ranges of planet mass, and it sort of breaks it down so you can look at the sort of frequency distribution of planets of different masses. And having a quick look at that, you can see that if you look at the sort of smallest planets, there is one planet down there that's sort of less than a percent of Jupiter's mass. But in fact, that's one of these that was one of the first discovered, in fact, which was, I think, 1992, if I remember rightly, which was going around a pulsar. So it's looking at pulsar timing. So it's quite an unusual thing because, of course, the parent star has exploded in a supernova. Perhaps somewhat surprising that there's any planets left orbiting at all, maybe. In terms of planets going around normal stars, then the lowest mass one that's been found is Gliese 581c. Which is going around a star called Gliese 581, and it's about five times the mass of the Earth, which is about 0.016 the mass of Jupiter.
That's amazingly small.
Yep.
I mean, five times the mass of the Earth is a small planet.
That's a small planet. we're interested in these things for reasons of how planets are formed, and you know, it obviously relates to how stars are formed as well. But of course, there's also the bigger question, I guess, of the broader question of whether there's life out there somewhere, and maybe we're looking for planets like the Earth just in case somewhere out there there's some life on the on one of those planets looking back at us through its telescopes.
And the next part of Mike's question is, what is the smallest planet we think we could find from across these vast distances?
Well, I mean, there's a number of different methods that are used. We've mentioned this Doppler wobble thing. One of the other methods we haven't mentioned is looking for transits, which is sort of where you look for an eclipse as the planet passes across the front of the star as it's orbiting around it. That's got the potential to find quite small planets. There's also micro lensing, which mm-hmm. you're aware of, the sort of gravitational lensing technique, which looks for the sort of magnification of a background star as the star with a planet passes across the front. And again, that's got the potential to get down to quite small planets. I think in many of these cases, I mean, you could probably correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that limits us at the moment is, for example, is the atmosphere. And so I think a lot of these techniques are going to be vastly improved when the space-based missions start sort of coming to fruition, really.
Mm.
I don't know whether that fits with your understanding.
Yes, no, I think that's true. And in the case of the last planet that we mentioned, this Gliese 581c, that is going around a star which is relatively close to us, so it's in our general local neighbourhood.
Mm.
Some of the other techniques, in particular the one which I work on, which is the gravitational microlensing technique, found a similar mass planet, 5.5 Earth mass planet in this case, but that was going around a star which was many thousands of light years away.
Hmm.
So it really depends on the technique that you use, but it is still possible to find these very low mass planets thousands of light years away, not just confined to our local neighbourhood of stars.
Mm. So it's basically just a matter of time.
It's a matter of time.
We're going to find them. They are there.
They are there. We're going to find them. Yeah. They are there. We just need to get better, improve the telescopes, improve our analysis, and we are going to find Earth mass planets.
Mm. Brilliant.
Next question comes from William Blumenfeld, and his question is, if I went straight up from Earth and I could keep going and going and going, where do I go? So I guess ultimately it is about, if we kept going, how far do we go? Or does space just keep going and going with no boundaries?
Ah, okay. So a classic question, I think. It's basically, to reword it again, is space, is the universe finite or infinite?
Mm-hmm. Does it have walls?
Yeah, does it go on forever or not? And I think if we sort of cut to the chase, we can probably give you the answer now. We don't know. we don't actually know yet whether the universe is finite or infinite. I guess one of the first things to say is of course that the bit of the universe that we can see is finite, so we call that the observable universe. And the reason is because the light that we're sort of collecting from these distant galaxies, these distant objects, has been travelling for a limited amount of time. It's actually been travelling since, you know, if you're talking about a finite object like a star or a galaxy, it's been travelling since that thing formed. And if you sort of think in more general terms, the light's been travelling since the Big Bang. So in that sense, it can only have travelled a certain distance. And so you can sort of imagine yourself sitting at a certain point and looking out at the universe around you, and you can imagine a sort of bubble of space around you, which is lit up, you know, which the light has actually managed to get to you from.
Mm.
So that's the observable universe, and that clearly is finite because you know, with the universe, the Big Bang was about 14 billion years ago, and so that part of the question is true. The question, that's sometimes what we call the horizon, the observable part of the universe. The question is, how much beyond the horizon does the universe go? And clearly, we can't see it. So this is the problem.
Yes.
So it's not going to be, the universe is going to be bigger than the observable universe. It's bound to be bigger than the observable universe. By what factor? I mean, one of the things, it may be that we'll always find that question very hard to answer, actually. It may be that we won't find the answer to that question, I suspect. But it can also be that, for example, if the universe is finite, and you have to think, how might the universe be finite? We don't tend to think about it as there being something outside of the universe, in the sense that people often think about the Big Bang sort of expanding out into something. We don't, you know, tend to think that way in general. What we would imagine doing is, you can imagine doing something like, you know, in what geometry could the universe be finite? Well, if you think about something like a torus, I mean, I don't know, you know, like a donut?
Like a donut, yep.
Yeah. So you've basically got a sort of, you know, a thing with a hole in the middle, and you sort of live on the surface of it. It's possible to make one of those things. You could take a sort of sheet of paper, roll it up into a cylinder or something, and then connect the two ends of the cylinder together, and you've got a torus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's a sort of finite universe. And if you sort of imagine if we lived in some geometry like that, then one of the things about that is that it's quite complicated, and there's sort of multiple paths along which light could travel, for example. You might see the signature of that geometry in something like the microwave background radiation from the Big Bang, because light's travelling along these complex paths through the universe. So
it's hard to think about space as being, as having some kind of shape, some kind of geometry, because we're sort of 3D creatures living in this 3D universe, and you think that, well, I mean, if I get up and walk out of this room, I end up somewhere else, and if I keep on going, then I'll keep on going, I end up somewhere else, you know, further away still. However, if I, you know, get my directions completely correct and I start walking out of this office, I should end up walking back into it again,
even if I keep
on going in the same direction. Yeah. So I guess that's part of the question
that
William's asking is, you know, is that similar for the universe? If I start going in one direction, what happens to me?
Well, we know, I mean, as I say, we know that if, you know, out to the observable universe, out to the horizon that we can currently see to, then, yeah, that, you know, you would keep going in those terms. But it's sort of beyond that, we just don't know at the moment. And it may be that we'll never know. I mean, there are interesting theories abounding about the, you know, whether the universe is part of some sort of multiverse or something, or whether there's, you know, it's part of some grander sort of system of universes, if you like. And again, you know, I would say at the moment that's, you know, it's very interesting stuff, and what you've got to do is look for an observable signature of it, really. I mean, you know, it's in the realm of theoretical physics to explore those areas, but if we can find a prediction from one of those theories that we can test with an observation, then that truly is exciting at that point.
Yeah, so the answer is we don't know, but we're working on it.
Yep, that's right.
All right, well, thank you very much indeed, Tim, for answering those questions. Everybody, please do keep your questions coming in. You can submit your questions to Tim at the Jodcast webpage, www.jodcast.net.